Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new monthly edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes today. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is the Bloomberg Daybreak Europe podcast, available every morning on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. It's Tuesday, the 23rd of April in London. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Coming up today, after a long fight and much controversy, Rishi Sunak's Rwanda deportation plan is passed through Parliament.
Goldman Sachs moves a top dealmaker from London to Paris in the latest relocation away from the City of London.
Plus, fighting to pull Gucci off the discount rack. Some analysts and investors question whether caring CEO François-Henri Pinault is the right man to overhaul the fashion house.
Let's start with a roundup of our top stories.
After months of delays, the UK's controversial Rwanda deportation bill will now become law. Following weeks of legislative back and forth between MPs and the House of Lords, the upper house backed down last night, allowing Rishi Sunak's plan to send failed asylum seekers to the African country to pass through Parliament. The government is relying on the policy to deter migrants from making the perilous journey in small boats across the English Channel. Rishi Sunak says plans are well underway.
We've put an airfield on standby, booked commercial charter planes for specific slots, and we have 500 highly trained individuals ready to escort illegal migrants all the way to Rwanda, with 300 more trained in the coming weeks.
Sunak's advisers see the policy as a potential electoral game changer, showing he's delivering on a promise to stop the boats. The number of migrants reaching the UK by boat hit a record in the first 3 months of this year.
Meanwhile, the UK is preparing its biggest military aid package for Ukraine since Russia's invasion. The Prime Minister says that long-range missiles, boats and armoured vehicles totalling £500 million will be sent to Kyiv. The news comes as President Biden promised his administration would move quickly to distribute more weapons after the Senate votes on an aid package this week. Retired US Army Brigadier General Mark Kimmett says the assistance will help slow Russia's progress.
It will allow Ukraine to defend the front lines for this fighting season. I don't think we're at the point where this aid alone will allow them to conduct a counteroffensive. But I think that we've got to realize that Russia is making gains, and the most important thing is to stop those gains, to reinforce the lines.
Mark Kimmett speaking there. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says the package will really strengthen the armed forces of Ukraine.
A key Goldman Sachs executive has moved from London to Paris in the latest sign of finance's Brexit exodus. The head of dealmaking for EMEA financial institutions, Dirk Leavens, has told Bloomberg he intends to double the size of the team in France. Chris Pitt has the story.
Financial dealmaking is heating up in Europe, and the UK is not necessarily invited. Firms have excess cash and want to deploy it across the continent, making Paris a key place to drive M&A activity. That's what Goldman's Dirk Leavens told Bloomberg when we asked about why he'd moved there from London. He added, there is a Brexit component, but it's not the main driver. It's the latest exit of a senior investment banker from the city in the wake of Britain's decision to leave the European Union. In London, Chris Pitt, Bloomberg Radio.
The FTSE 100 closed at a record high for the first time in more than a year on Monday. The index's mining and energy focus gave it a boost in the face of geopolitical uncertainty and OPEC plus supply limits. It's up 4% year to date, with Shell and BP alone accounting for almost half of those gains. The rise will come as a relief to the London Stock Exchange after the CEO of Shell, Wael Swan, told Bloomberg that investors undervalue the business where it is. If the valuation gap with the United States doesn't close, though, Sawan says the oil major would have to look at all options for its listing.
As tensions with Iran ease, Israel is returning its focus to Rafah in southern Gaza, an area Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has described as the last remaining stronghold of Hamas. More than 1 million people have been sheltering in the small city after fleeing their homes since the start of Israel's offensive in October. Speaking on Sunday, Netanyahu indicated he's about to send troops into Rafah.
We will land additional and painful blows on it, and it will happen soon. In the coming days, we will increase the military and political pressure on Hamas, because this is the only way to free our hostages and achieve our victory.
Netanyahu's comments were followed by airstrikes on Rafah overnight into Monday. Israeli military officials estimate that up to 8,000 Hamas fighters are holed up in the city. The US and other allies have strongly urged Israel not to invade Rafah amid fears that it would likely worsen the humanitarian crisis in Gaza.
Pro-Palestinian protests are spreading across some of America's most prestigious universities, including Harvard, MIT and Yale. It comes in the wake of a decision by Columbia University to call in the police to arrest hundreds of students for trespassing. The move was intended to clear pro-Palestinian demonstrators who want the school to exit all investments that benefit Israel's government. But the crackdown appears to have had the opposite effect. Speaking yesterday, President Biden also weighed in on the protests.
I condemn the anti-Semitic protests. That's why I've set up a program to deal with that. I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians.
Joe Biden's reaction there. Columbia has now moved its classes online, while other universities have got tough with demonstrators. At Yale, police arrested 60 people, including 47 students, early on Monday, and Harvard restricted access to parts of its campus this week. Now, in a moment, we'll bring you more on the vote in the UK Parliament to approve plans to deport failed asylum seekers to Rwanda. And also we'll look at why the luxury giant Kering is facing challenges for its main brand, Gucci, and what the way forward might be. But another story caught our eye this morning. Actually, you prodded me and said that you thought this was a really good one, talking about, you know, summer holidays. Our opinion columnist Tyler Cohen writing about the ongoing dilemma about over-tourism. I mean, this is a familiar one for us in Europe.
Yeah, it certainly is. And so Tyler Cohen was sparked to write about this by the fact that our authorities in Barcelona have gotten Apple and Google Maps to take a bus route off their apps to basically mean that tourists won't know it's there and thus won't overcrowd a route that locals use as well. Now, he says that oftentimes in the arguments you hear much louder from those cities that want to try and reduce over tourism, and he's putting the tourist case forward, and he's essentially saying, make them pay for it. Make the dilemma that you should do something like, he uses the example of the higher prices for bullet trains in Japan for tourists. He says that's the way to do it. Essentially, when a tourist experience costs more, tourists themselves can decide whether or not they think it's worth it.
Yeah, the bus route, of course, is one of the most fabulous in Barcelona, right? It goes to Antoni Gaudí's park in Barcelona. So I think in some ways it's going to make the tourists walk further. I have an issue with making all tourists pay more to see those things which are kind of global heritage sites. But I do get that Cohen says, you know, if you up the price, then you reduce the tourism, and it also benefits the locals if you reuse that money, let's say, to build affordable housing, etc., in your city.
Exactly. And that's sort of part of his argument. He essentially says, comes to the conclusion that actually having too many tourists is not as big a problem as having too few for a lot of places as well. Anyway, worth your time to read on the Terminal this morning. And of course, on Bloomberg.com as well.
Okay, let's get to then Rishi Sunak's controversial deportation bill to send failed asylum seekers to Africa. Well, it is becoming law after the House of Lords dropped its opposition to the government's plan that was first announced 2 years ago. The Prime Minister said in a news conference on Monday that the first flights would take off in 10 to 12 weeks. Joining us now to discuss our UK politics reporter, James Wilcock. Good morning. Firstly, just what happened last night? It was set to be this sort of huge battle between the Lords and the Commons.
I mean, Caroline, it was. I mean, you say they dropped their opposition. That is technically correct. But I mean, the better way to put this is Rishi Sunak's strong
strong-armed the Lords into accepting this. I mean, not to take you back to the 1900s and the Parliament Act, but the Lords effectively say, our job is to critique. We can't block forever a bill. And the government basically said, we're just going to keep passing this until you all go home. And it went back and forth five times. The heart of the Lords' objection is, how do you independently and in future assure that Rwanda is safe? Because the bill basically says Rwanda is safe. That makes the Supreme Court ruling last year that Rwanda is not safe invalid, and therefore flights can start straight away. And the Lords went, but how are you showing that, and how will you show that in future? Now, I want to read from the person who was putting that to the Conservative Party, who was leading that amendment, Lord David Anderson, who is a crossbench independent peer. So at the end of this, he said, the purpose of ping pong, where this goes back and forth between the chambers, is to persuade the government through force of argument to come to the table and compromise. They have refused to do so. Mm. So they did back down, they did drop their opposition, but basically they did that because parliamentary convention states they can't hold up an elected chamber, not because their objections have been dealt with.
James, why has this become such an important issue for the Prime Minister?
I think three answers, Stephen. One is the net migration numbers from 2022 at a record of 745,000 put the issue back on the table. The second is Rishi Sunak himself has chosen this issue in an election year and has given it that weight. I mean, he did the press conference yesterday. He has multiple times chosen to put this issue at the spotlight and in the centre of attention. And thirdly, it's his own party, many of which have driven Brexit through at intense personal and political cost, of which a key message of that 2016 referendum was to get migration down. This is where it gets messy, because a lot of the messaging around that referendum and by Tory MPs is around net migration, stop the boats from Rwanda. It's specifically about illegal migration. However, that kind of strength of feeling from MPs and the Prime Minister is what has driven this issue back to the top of agenda, driven as well by that data.
Yeah, exactly. The data sort of undermining the kind of argument that the government's made progress. I mean, will it deter boat crossings? Again, much debate on that.
That is an impossible question to answer, Caroline, because we simply don't know. I mean, look, I will get you a letter from 2022 that the head of the Home Office Civil Service wrote to Priti Patel at the time saying, we cannot, because we have zero estimates of how this policy will deter migrants, give it a good enough value for money. So he basically has to write a letter saying, we don't think this is value for money because we can't prove it. And that's what Labour keep using as the attack line. They call it an expensive gimmick. To use the Migration Observatory stats briefly, they say, look, we have a few hundred people sent every year if the UK government's figures are to be taken at face value. And if you take the numbers of people currently crossing the boats, you've got about a 1% to 2% chance if you cross illegally of being sent to Rwanda. Will that 1% to 2% chance, if flights do start taking off in 12 weeks, Rishi Sunak says, deter people? That is the question. Whether it will is, at this point, hard to say. But what I will say is, as and when it does start, the public will start to make a judgment on if it has. And then Rishi Sunak's policy will have to face the question of if it has succeeded or failed. And that is weeks away.
OK, James Wilcock, our UK politics reporter. Thank you.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new monthly edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes today. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
After Kering's shocking profit warning in the first quarter, some investors are questioning whether CEO François-Henri Pinault is the right man to overhaul this brand at a critical juncture. Gucci is undergoing a designer transition with Sabato De Sarno's quiet luxury push, but the corporate governance issue is also at stake. Joining us now to discuss today's big take is Bloomberg's Caroline Cunard in Paris. Great to have you on the programme this morning. You know, talking about Kering, good morning. I mean, unlike LVMH and Hermès, Kering's share price has lost about a third of its value since the pandemic. And so one could ask, what has gone wrong with the brand?
So, you know, one issue is that Kering has been over-reliant on Gucci. The brand Gucci represents two-thirds of profitability, whereas if you compare to Louis Vuitton, for example, it only represents about half of LVMH profitability. So Kering also has only 13 brands, whereas LVMH has a more diverse portfolio, 75 brands, so they can also be more resistant when you have some downturns, for example, in China. And that is a problem of Gucci as well. Gucci is very exposed to China and less to the US. So they cannot really benefit from the rebound of US demand as much as rivals. But there's something more that you can read in this big take is that Gucci is actually suffering from a declining desirability. So they fell to number 12 in what we call the list index, which tracks brands according to online searches and on social media. So they have a new designer, Salvatore Dosano, who comes from Valentino, presented his first collection in Milan last September, but it's hard to tell yet whether his style of quiet luxury, which is very different from his predecessor, Alessandro Michele, who was very colorful, will actually work out. And his level of fame, of course, is pretty far from the former legendary Gucci designer Tom Ford in the early 2000s.
Caroline, central to Kering's future, of course, is the CEO, François-Henri Pinault, a fascinating figure. But some investors and company executives are pointing the finger at him for the problems at Kering.
Yeah, some investors have been questioning his responsibility. He's already second generation. His father, François Pinault, founded the group, and he does not have the same management style as his rival, Bernard Arnault, who's still at the helm at LVMH. Bernard Arnault is very controlling, whereas Pinault is considered very laissez-faire, leaving perhaps too much freedom to the brands. And then also the question of his daily involvement. He spends a lot of time on the West Coast in the US with his wife, Salma Hayek. And last year, he spent close to $7 billion to buy Creative Artist Agency, which manages talents from Brad Pitt to his own wife, actually. And yet, one source at Kering told us in this big take that that hasn't distracted him from Kering. He's also done some good moves recently, purchasing a bigger stake in Valentino, investing in luxury eyewear, in fact, becoming the number two in luxury eyewear in the world, but there's still a long way to go to catch up with rivals. And his son, François-Louis Pinault, is only 26 years old, so he's too young to succeed him quite yet.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, your morning brief on the stories making news from London to Wall Street and beyond.
Look for us on your podcast feed every morning on Apple, Spotify and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
You can also listen live each morning on London DAB Radio, the Bloomberg Business app and Bloomberg.com.
Our flagship New York station is also available on your Amazon Alexa devices. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Join us again tomorrow morning for all the news you need to start your day, right here on Bloomberg Daybreak Europe.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.